I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome to another episode of Superfan Chats, the show where we generally just talk about all the superfan stuff regarding No Small Roles. And this time we're having a very chilled time. We're very much relying on the side quests of No Small Roles, as we're looking from episodes 44 to 47. Have you ever listened to those yet? Please do listen to them before you listen to this, because spoilers, and we don't like spoilers here. And oh look, the superfans! Here I am, joined by Superfan Sam and Superfan Pippa. Hello there, guys.
Hey, guys.
Hello. Hey. And thank you to you, Lord Crumpet. That was a good command.
Thank you. It is I, the Lord Crumpet, returned once again with my crumpety goodness.
We're here to support you. Oh, you said about it being kind of a nice, relaxing one. It was a nice return to silliness.
Mm.
It's been very serious for a long time, and it was kind of nice to hear everyone playing around and being walruses and eating sausages. It was great.
Oh, honest, I think we just needed it. I think our last superfan chat was so, like, questioning the characters' motivations. Do we trust characters anymore?
Yeah.
What's going to happen now? That it's just nice to be like, okay, so how did they do eating no sausages? So who threw up first? What does that mean for the team? Like, that's just great. I'm here for this.
I know. I can't wait to cover that one.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that, like, Inky, do you think he's evil? kind of floating about in these. But it was less or so. Like, the last one was so, is Enkidu now a complete machine? And how do we feel about this in the grander journey and kings and king, like, you know, 50,000 golems as well?
Yeah.
It's kind of nice to shrug that off a little bit. But I'm sure David has plans in the works.
David always has plans.
Sausage takeover.
He always does. And he's just very sneaky. So I'm not ready for this, because I know he's going to lure us in.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to lure us in with all this lovely, oh, look, the Twain Tide tournament. Oh, it's so innocent. And then something's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to be there first. Like, sorry, no, you can't do this to me.
Lull us into a false sense of security. The card before... The card? The... What is it? What's the
calm
phrase? Calm before the storm. Jesus.
The calm before the storm.
Wow,
there we go.
The card before the storm. Getting confused by Vicky's tarot cards.
Could be a card. You never know.
Shall I kick us off, guys?
Yeah, go for it. Go on then.
Off you go, Pippa.
So episode 44. Yes. This is a really nice, calm episode where the party have waved goodbye to Myra and Ferrocene, and we had that lovely touching scene in the previous episode with the invisible hug.
Oh.
Yeah, it was beautiful, wasn't it?
It was so touching.
It's an episode of messages, to be honest. It's an episode of messages and preparing for the road ahead. So there are messages going back and forth between Juna and Heron Ilwyn.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, very funny, just trying to cram enough words into the word limit.
Yeah.
And love from Juna. That was a good moment.
I love the whole idea of they mentioned it being done on a Nokia 3310.
Yeah, exactly.
Of sending.
Yeah.
I love that reference.
Proper brick phone.
Pressing multiple buttons to get the right letter.
Because we all had one, didn't we? We all had one.
Everybody had a Nokia.
Yeah.
The indestructible. I think I still got one.
There's also the message from Gwen to her father using Oren's notebook, which we found out a few sort of nice little details about her family. And we also found out that her nickname from her family to her was Delhi, which is really sweet.
Delhi.
Yeah. That's really nice.
Delhi. And she knows how to write small, or it's a really big notebook. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
That was a long message.
Very tiny handwriting.
It's just like an A3 notebook.
Yeah. You know, when you're like, putting two lines in the space of one line. I think it's very much that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. We've got Orin and Enkidu having a little nosy around the workshop again and using the silver sheets to make a slightly dodgy shield.
Yeah.
We've got the wing thruple back together having a little snuggle on the sofa overnight.
I forgot.
It was really cute. Such a cute moment.
Yeah, I forgot too. Oh.
And Orin very definitely not snuggling up with the wing thruple and finding a different corner to bed down in.
Well, he had all his schematics and everything, didn't he? He's got a dark vision visor or something.
Oh yeah, dark vision visor. Yeah, plans for a dark vision visor. This is going to be cool.
Very handy.
And they all have their long rest, and Enkidu keeping watch on the rooftops. And as he awakes and the sun rises, we see this very menacing row of golems in the tree line. And it's quite cool when he tries to speak to them. He kind of sort of makes a connection, but Erida kind of steps in and interrupts him.
Yeah, she very quickly stops that.
yeah, definitely. It's made very clear that he needs to head south straight away. And then on their way out, they talk about thinking about some group names, and Orin comes up with the name the Fate Marked Five. And they have a little chat about discussing what their cover's going to be going forwards, being tourists, rambling tourists. And that's kind of the crux of the episode. So it's kind of mostly about, these messages, planning, and the menacing golems that obviously they've not really left them behind just yet.
Yeah, but it's kind of suggested that ability is there, right? That he could potentially reach out and communicate with them, potentially control them. It's just kind of if he's on board with Erida's plans.
Yeah, perhaps as he gets more powerful.
That would be a great plot twist. Just at the end, they all kill Erida and he just takes over the golem army. Like,
Oh God, I'm Erida now.
I mean, this slightly worries me because we talked last time about how, I mean, it was my little theory that as they get closer and closer to the throne, is he going to become less and less of himself?
Yeah.
You wonder, is there going to be a threshold he crosses where he's sort of proven himself that he is going to kind of carry out that prime directive and he'll then be given access to those golems maybe in the future?
That's a very good point.
I mean, does it unnerve you that he already refers to it as the prime directive as well? That's how he first spoke about it to Erida. It's like, I will achieve the prime directive. It's a little unnerving.
I don't like it. It was the only part, I think, of these last few episodes that you actually were like, oh God, there's still that sort of sense that something...
Yeah,
it is like them just hiding in the forest. Yeah. Like they're just stood in the corner, like everywhere they go, just in the corner, like watching them. Like something from a horror film, do you know what I mean?
It kind of reminded me of the Dwayne Fabulosa and his pursuer, like, The Revenant.
Yes.
That kind of aspect, except if anything, this is scarier than a Revenant because you know that there's 50,000 brothers behind them.
Mm. Yes.
There's not just the one.
And they can literally like Google Maps wherever Enkidu is at any point in time.
Just find his GPS. Yeah, there he is. Yeah. Oh, there we go.
Find my Enkidu
setting. Track my phone. Find my Enkidu app.
I love it.
They've just got all the wing throps spread around. And they're like, oh, who are we looking for today? Just scrolling through.
Ooh, what's Enkidu doing?
Oh, we checked in at Sticky Sausage. Wow.
He's in the Sticky Sausage. Oh, that sounds fun.
This is the Facebook location thing, isn't it? Oh, checked in, Sticky Sausage. All right. Oh, have a nice time.
Check the TripAdvisor for that one.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
My favourite revelation in this episode, though, was the whole Vicky finding out that Jenny's not a gnome.
Yes.
Oh, that was, of course.
That was big. It's just been going along this whole track, this whole time. Would we not have had as much of Jenny then if Vicky hadn't thought she was a gnome? Because every time she saw us, go chat to her or flower check her.
Yeah.
Do you know what? That's probably half the reason why she spoke to us so much.
Yeah.
But she never mentioned it in previous episodes. Like, I thought, oh, maybe if I, like, listen back. But she never actually said, oh, it's good to talk to a fellow gnome, or it's good to talk to a da-da-da-da-da. So she never brings it up.
Yeah.
So you just assume that Juna just loves Jenny just because she likes chatting. And I mean, that is still very Juna.
Yeah. And I mean, we love Jenny because of it, right? You know, we kind of learned to love the whole going back to her and just hearing the town's gossip.
Yeah.
The idea that maybe wouldn't have been as much of a thing if Vicky hadn't been fully seeking out this character.
Aw, this is so so yeah. sad.
I love these kind of out of character moments that happen just every so often. Mm. I love the fact that they keep them in and we get to hear the thought process behind it, because it would be quite easy to go, right, well, it's not actually relevant to this and blah, blah, blah. But it's lovely that we keep those humorous misunderstandings in.
Yeah.
I think that one's up there for me and Chris's I've Got 1,000 Gold.
Oh, good moments.
Gold is very hard to track in D&D games. It's like the last thing you think
of. Particularly when you're playing with Chris. I mean, Jesus. I know it's coming up in a couple of episodes' time, but or maybe even next episode, the 250 gold that he gets. And he still does not want to let the party know that he's got it. Nope. It's like a real begrudging, oh, some mysterious benefactor just gave me 250 gold pieces. And they're like, we know that's bullshit, yeah, but
we have to play along.
Yeah. Oh, God.
His charisma checks are just too high for them to be like, right, I'm calling you out on this. Yeah. So they just have to be like, yeah, okay, sure. Just move on.
For all they know, maybe he does have 1,000 gold. He might be lying to us. We might not know everything about Gaius. I mean, we don't know everything about Gaius. We know so little about Gaius.
Turns out his mask is like laden with gold, like just laced into it. And it's worth 1,000. So if he sells it, he's just, that's it. That's his fortune right there and there.
Yeah, yeah, the underside of this is just diamond.
Yeah.
All of the inside.
Yeah, exactly. Just encrusted
his
underneath.
His purple eye is like a diamond and an amethyst. Inside it.
That would actually be pretty cool. He just like pulls out an eye, like, I'm gonna sell it for the team. Everyone's like, ew, put it back.
Oh man.
Keep your diamonds.
Yeah.
But yeah, this whole gnome obsession. I mean, David might as well just make the big bad of the campaign a gnome, and then Vicky's or Juno will inevitably lead them to it, because they found out about that other gnome. I wrote the name down, I might have got it wrong. Kieda Tagadon?
Kieda Tagadon is what I've got written down.
Kieda. Yep. But yeah, again, they mentioned that this guy's a gnome, and all of a sudden they're like, oh my God, yeah, we definitely have to go see this guy.
Yeah.
Could be evil.
Could be.
We don't know.
Yeah.
Could be. Yeah.
We're still talking about how much we trust Heron Ilwyn, so.
Yeah, which is, we know probably less about Heron Ilwyn than we know about Gaius, which is troubling.
Yeah.
We're just generally quite untrustworthy people when it comes to this podcast. But yeah, I don't trust you.
I think an experience with Erida would probably do that.
Yeah, that's very fair. We're traumatised. That's what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Which is why we need this grace period.
Exactly.
I mean, Grace as Gwen kind of started this rebirth with this new campaign by literally changing her whole outfit.
Yes.
She's gone for that kind of like lumberjack vibe, which I really love, and I kind of want to see some fan art of.
If I don't
have time to do it myself, but kind of starting that transition from Gwendolyn Rose to Carhilda, which she eventually becomes.
Carhilda, yeah.
But yeah, I'm happy to talk about the next episode, which was episode 45.
Oh, look, the town!
Oh, aptly named. Oh, look, the town. I'm so glad that he actually did that in the end. I know they talked about it, but it's so easy to forget those things when you're editing them week after week. Okay, noticeable moments that I found in this one. I mean, we got to love David's ad-libbing at the beginning when he came up with the postcard salesman.
Postcards.
It was just like the wonderful painted ones. And like, they're a copper each, but one still gets stolen because people don't have money at the moment. I love that little just kind of like, I've just imagined them. Yeah, they're down by the water. Yeah, there's a dragon in this.
And Chris
page.
Is utter delight at it as well. Chris is so happy.
So, can you trade my one gold for one copper? It's counting out all these copper pieces. Yes, the main crux of this episode, though, let's be honest, is about the tavern, which was delightfully brought up that it was Patreon-supported content. Yep. We all voted on this.
Yep.
I voted for Cocky, I think.
Oh.
But it came out Sticky Sausage and the Amazing Sausage Eating Contest.
Oh, this was so much fun.
I mean, there was some other stuff. There was like the selling of the gold sheets. There was the introduction to the Twain Tie Tea Tournament, which I definitely want to chat about.
Yes.
And there was, of course, this wanted poster for Gwendolyn. Colin DeBarge has clearly not given up interest yet, and he's actively looking for her. So it's kind of good that she's started this transition to Carhilda. And like, The coming up with the name things, like, oh, I could be Dawn Thorne or Jenny Flower, and then eventually landing on, why don't I call myself my actual name? Which I thought was kind of beautiful.
Yeah,
that was nice, yeah.
But yes, I want to talk about sausages and the fact that this group are now, like, they've got over this whole golem thing, and now it's all just about what can I stomach? Yeah. It was delightful. I really, really, really enjoyed this episode.
I was so rooting for them to win as well. I was so rooting
for
it.
Oh, they were so close.
I was like, come on! Because they were so close, but it is what it is, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Those were some nasty sausages.
I did think there was a chance. There was a bit of a chance.
There was a real chance.
They all went in individually, and I remember Ben actually saying this, this jumped out at me on the second listen, is that he says that his flash of genius can be applied to somebody else. So if he'd done it on Enkidu or on Juna, they might have been it. But I mean, you know, it's hindsight is 2020.
Yeah, hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Plus at the time, I suppose it makes sense for all the characters to just focus on themselves.
Yeah.
Because they've all entered in individually. Like it's different, obviously we'll discuss later, but it's different with the Twain Tide tournament where it's just like, everyone have a go.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with this one, it's like, we've paid money to do this. We need to focus on like getting through ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I really thought Enkidu would just boss it because he doesn't have hunger. I just thought he'd not have any taste buds and would just be like, lop, lop, lop. And then everyone would be like looking at him like, what on earth, he's a machine. And he's like, yes, no, 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 and just keeps eating them.
Ironically, if he'd have been given not such a kind of state-of-the-art body by the Wingthraps, he probably wouldn't have had taste buds in quite the same way.
Yeah.
It's because he's been given such a realistic state-of-the-art body that everything works as perfectly as a real body, has actually worked to his detriment maybe in this particular tournament.
That's actually a very good point.
Which, yeah, we're starting to learn. He's got abilities, but they're like, it's not that he can't do what humans do. It's just that he hasn't really got the desire to do those things now,
or the
need for it. It's just, you know, whether he kind of feels like it, but he's still got taste buds and stuff. But yeah, he rolled a 22 for that check, for that constitution save in the final round. He rolled a 22, which means that somebody on this table was 24
exactly.
above.
Yeah,
kind of
higher than that.
You know, to swallow two sausages, that must have been a natural 20. I can't see it being any other way. But yeah, we were introduced to people in this episode that didn't really have much of a part to play. We kind of met Cade a little bit more at the end, because he was the one with the gruff voice that
you'll
explained
have to do an
about
impression.
the Twain Tide Tea tournament. It was great.
It was like very serious.
Yeah, but we kind of met Rosie, who may turn up in the tournament later. This was the dwarf.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure they're all going to come back.
And yeah, we met Cade, and there was another one, the one with the decorative sword, the half-orc.
Ferian,
that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that if they're continuing with the Twain Tide tournament religiously, you know, that we're going to meet these characters doing things
later
on.
They're going to bump into them again, aren't they?
Yeah, they were kind of like craftily introduced.
Yeah, definitely.
And then like pushed to one side.
Dude's got that sword for a reason.
Yeah,
exactly.
I just can't wait to see the other sort of people they tend to meet along the way for this tournament, because you've got to be a specific kind of adventurer if you're like, oh yes, I want to collect spoons and win stuff to do with tea. Like, yes. Absolutely. I'm so here for it.
I mean, can you imagine if they were like, nah, you know, we got a pressing engagement, we've got to do all of this. And I don't know whether it's like just the vibe of this particular episode doing a competition made them think like, no, actually we need a little bit more of this in the podcast. Like the whole idea of going out and collecting spoons.
Even then, like, could you imagine David's put all this effort in and then they're just like, nah.
Yeah, no, we're not going to do this. No thanks.
Nah,
designing the poster and just going, nah, we're fine. We don't want to do this.
Those golems following us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we really have time to go get some spoons?
I think he'd actually
this, like,
cry.
Pokemon inspired thing. So good.
Yeah.
I love it. I'm so here for the names of these sausages as well.
Yeah. What with, we got the King's Mustard Bangers.
Yep.
Which were like the really
actually
ones
made
to eat right
me
at the start.
Physically gag because I hate mustard. I hate mustard so much. I was listening to it and I went, so bad. I was like, well, I have failed. First round, I'm done.
Well, a lot of people did. Didn't half the bar go on the first sausage? Like those two that
he
introduced, Cade and Ferian, they were like, nah,
we're
done.
Nah, we're out.
Oh, God. Rosie was taken down by the Crocat Shroom Dogs.
Yeah.
Yes,
such a great name.
The Shroom Dogs.
And then the final one, which obviously got Ben, was the Shrouded Pepper Pork.
Shrouded
I love
pepper
it.
Pork.
So good. So good.
Good names.
Mm.
But it's funny because they actually sell shroom dogs. That's the veggie alternative that you can get. So I was just like looking in my fridge like, oh my God. No.
No, they're too spicy.
Yeah, just get some really sour sauce to put on the top of them.
David must have had a lot of fun coming up with those, the names of the sausages and just, I love it when that kind of thing happens, when you like change a band name to a fantasy band name.
Yeah.
Love those, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yes, they are now on the competition road. 50 gold pieces to enter, and then 500 for a win of this tournament.
Yeah.
Which Guy just happened to find.
Yes, I know. Mm-hmm. Comes up with that out of nowhere. Could have used those gold sheets for crafting.
I just got given us money, honestly.
Although, when they first mentioned it, and he was like, oh yeah, 250.
Mm.
I was thinking he meant 2 gold 50, which for the longest time, I was thinking it's like 250. They're haggling for like a 20th of a gold piece. I was slow there.
I'm quite interested about his sword as well. His Geranian commander's sword, yeah. Where he got that from.
Mm.
And he's not willing to part with it for 100 gold.
Yeah. Even though he can't use it.
Yeah, exactly.
I know. I was going to say, he steals stuff everywhere. I'm like, when the gold sheets, like you said, came back up, I was just like, of course. Like, I knew this would just be like something to sell, something to get rid of. Just like, you know, any opportunity to steal something, he will do it. He's a bit of a kleptomaniac in that sense.
Yeah.
Like,
and then not tell anyone about it.
I guess.
Yeah.
It's like he knows the shame of it, but he does it anyway because it's in his nature.
Mm-hmm.
This is Chris just absolutely playing what's on his page down to a T and just sticking to it all times.
Yep.
But it does get really frustrating when they're like, oh man, you know, we've only got 12 gold or whatever, and we need to go get more money for this. And he's sitting there with 250 gold at this point and just like, oh man, I think he says he's got like 14 goals. Oh, it's not enough.
Yeah.
You're going to go and do stuff.
Got to go again.
Everyone outside of it is just like laughing because they know, but they like, in game, they have no idea, so they can't comment.
So well. Oh God.
Yeah. Ugh. Hilarious.
But yeah, that kind of encapsulates this episode. But yeah, kind of rounding it off with this whole idea that Colin DeBarge is definitely still out there, which we hear a bit more about as we go forward. So I'm hoping maybe we'll turn up somewhere in this arc. Would be fun.
Yeah. I mean, him combined with the characters that we heard more about in Gwen's letter with Laurel and her brother and sister.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to having more of sort of Gwen's like extended family and her friends and Colin DeBarge, like how they're going to fit into story, because you know they're coming at some point in the future.
Yeah.
It's going to be really interesting to see how that all happens and how that all comes together.
We know a bit more about Gwen's family now as well, don't we? We've had other names. There's
we know,
Prim,
yeah.
Dorian. Casula is the trainer, I think, the one that taught her in the Way of Decorum.
Yeah, that's like a stepmother, I think.
Yeah, the stepmom,
yeah.
And there's also the name Laurel as well, was a new name,
Laurel,
which we haven't heard much about.
I think is that the first time that's come up? Or?
If it isn't, it's the first time it's mentioned in any detail.
Mm.
I think it is... I might be wrong.
But look, probably in passing, I was going to say.
Yeah, maybe.
We're just going to have to put it in the notes for the next Superfan Chat, so we'll talk about it then.
Yeah, I'm just going to have to listen back to episodes 1 to 43, listening for the word Laurel.
Everyone, that's your mission. If you're listening to this now,
exactly.
I want you to hunt it down for Lord Crumpet, please. Thank you.
Oh, God.
So on to the next episode, episode 46, Roadside Experiments.
Dun, dun, dun.
This episode, they're catching up on 4 days' worth on the roads. There are more messages sent.
Yeah, it's message fest.
Yeah, message fest. Exactly.
Message fest.
It's basically message fest, Gaius pissing off Enkidu, Juno becoming a walrus, a battery exploding and injuring Orin, more messages, and some tattoos at the end of it. They're kind of the crux of these things.
Yeah.
So, and our little cameo from Dwayne.
Oh my God.
Oh,
I was
the little
so
Dwayne
glad
cameo.
Which was fantastic. I was so excited. So
the
excited.
The ting at the end of
Jeremy.
The of the team.
And it was so well set up as well. It was so well set up with sort of Gwen
so
going,
glad they did it.
So I'd like to send this message. Here it is, blah, blah, blah. And then David just going, so I've got something to play you all.
Oh, it was so good.
It was so well set up.
He did it a couple of times, didn't he? Because it was the almost preempting what Juno was going to say to Gwendolyn's dad, to Papa Rose.
Yes.
And for him to have a response. And like I say, it was kind of nice to get a feel of what this guy's like.
Yeah.
And him calling her Deli as well, you know, like real kind of family vibes.
Yeah, that was nice and reassuring, wasn't it? That it didn't come back and he was like super cross with her or anything like that. It was quite like, oh, nice family.
It was a good day for messages in Gwen's direction. Sorry, Carhilda's direction.
Carhilda's direction.
Carhilda.
You missed an absolutely major point, which we have to come to, which is that we have found the birth of Abracalads.
Yes.
Abracalads.
Yes. Oh, God. The thing is, I've been waiting for this to happen since the picnic. They talked about this, and we took the photo, which obviously came out at the right point after the episode came out. But I've been wondering for so long what this is in reference
When's
to.
When's it coming?
And it's just
when's
basically
it coming?
Them ribbing on Ben, and I love it.
Yeah. I want a T-shirt with the quote, "Don't make me make it a 34."
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, those are my favourite moments. Was delightful Jeremy Cobb, Juno the Walrus, and Abracalads are literally my three little bullet points that I've written at the bottom of my page.
So good.
And just of all the creatures she could have been, why walrus?
Oh.
Walrus?
Blame Chris.
Well, yeah, because Gaius shouted out and then was like, I've never seen a walrus before.
And she was like, well, here it is.
And then she just saw like a sad walrus as well, just this like walrus, sat with like the tusks down, like meh.
In the image of Colin DeBarge as walrus.
Yeah, with his whiskers.
Mate, it was just a little bit silly that we needed, especially with the battery stuff, because that was all a bit like, will it work? Will it actually release an element? Because I again, cynical me, I was like, it's not, nothing's going to happen, because it is, at this point, I was like, you know, with the sort of trials in the sort of...
Yeah, they've already been converted.
Like, I want to call it an escape room, but it's not an escape room, but it looks like an escape room. It was like, that's all I can think of right now. But in that room where they obviously converted all the animals, it was like, once they're converted, that is it.
That's it.
Very doubtful of anything good to come of it. But at least they don't have it on their person now. So it's not as volatile.
Yes, and it could have gone a lot worse.
Yeah.
This is the main thing. And the reason why they haven't released that flame one yet.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, because that leads on to the wands, right? We've got all the experiments
with the wands as well. Mm. Yeah.
Which is very handy.
And finding out that they can use those abilities. And there was a bit of me that kind of wanted them to tap into that a little bit more and see, you know, like Juno was suggesting, how low can you go?
Yeah.
Because I wonder, Enkidu obviously he hits it always at his maximum, being a warlock. Yeah. It's always his maximum level spell. I do wonder if he was able to do that sigil and cast it as level one, because I think they're all level one spells.
Yeah.
Or level one or level two. You've got mage armor, absorb elements, and lesser restoration.
That's
right. Might be a second
level. Yeah, those are the ones.
But I wonder if they cast that spell at the level in question, whether they can still cast that thing. Because otherwise, it might end up a bit costly. If they're like, oh, I really want mage armor, but it takes me a third level spell to be able to cast a first level defensive thing. Yeah. Still cool that they've worked out that they can do that, though, with Enkidu's sympathy magic with Erida.
Yeah, that was cool.
I'm surprised it's not restricted to higher ranking family members.
Yeah, I knew they were going to get that in there somewhere. Honestly, it did feel like that. Like, he tries to help them and he just goes, oh, sorry, you're not high-ranking family members, guys. Can't help you out this time. It was useful as well, because I'd spent so many episodes being like, when are they going to use them? When are they going to find out what it does? Or I just thought they were going to sell them. Like, I just thought they'd be sold on as like a commodity and just kind of gain the cash.
Maybe.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
So I'm impressed that they actually like, we can use these now. Like you said, obviously... maybe in like dire circumstances, though, because it costs so much magical kind of energy. But they're there if they need them. Yeah. Or if they need to give it to someone else who knows how to use it.
They're good bartering. If they almost sink someone's boat again, then they're good items to barter with. Sorry, Halling.
Here you go. Here's a fire battery.
Look, I've got a magic wand. Yeah. This will fix your boat, I swear. Yeah. It's a boat-fixing wand, I promise.
There are a couple more interesting messages to talk about as well. We had the message from Juna to Ginger, which was quite sweet. Mm. I'm going to look forward to meeting Ginger at some point. She sounds like she's going to be a real character. Golem sound fun.
Do you not get a bit of a... I don't know why. I get a bit of a creepy vibe from Ginger.
Ooh, really?
And I don't know if this is because... I know what David's like as a DM, that anything that seems too good to be true is often like tinged a little bit with darkness. And you
do
know, whether,
not trust.
I don't know. I just, what if Ginger is some kind of Palpatine character? I've got that, maybe like my Lord Crumpet, I'm a bit too skeptical about these things, but she seems almost too wholesome. And like Juna's got all these tattoos and like she puts the wording from Ginger on there. How brainwashed is Juna? Like... what's happened between her and Ginger? Is Ginger a force
that was
for darkness?
A little bit odd, her immediately tattooing what she said. But then again, you're talking to someone who, like, if they wanted a tattoo, they'd be like, I'm going to spend years trying to figure out what I want.
Mm.
But, I think Ginger is just, like, unhinged. I think that Ginger's a bit nutty, but it's kind of like that... I'm going to reference Avatar. It's like King Bumi in Avatar, where he's nuts. And the methods he uses are ridiculous, because he's like, you know, essentially puts his best mate through like a trial, but is actually a good guy, just a bit nuts. And I think that's Ginger. I think Ginger is going to do things that are questionable, but inevitably they are, you know, they are on the side of Juna. It's like all for the greater good kind of stuff, you know.
Uh-huh.
That's my opinion.
If Juna's King Bumi, who is Ginger to to her then?
So, no, Ginger's King Boomy.
Oh, okay, right.
So Ginger's King Boomy, and then Juna is Aang.
Oh my God, I really hope she has, like, rock spells. That would be amazing if it's, like, you know...
that would be amazing.
Rock in nature. But yeah...
David, make it canon. David, if you're listening, make it canon. Please.
Oh my God, she's an earthbender. Is that a thing in this world?
That could be a thing.
We heard a little bit from Enkidu about people he knows as well. Scarpus, who again, another elderly kind woman by the sound of it, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Probably also evil.
And telling the story of, probably. No, please no.
Everybody's evil.
Everybody's
in my mind. I'm too down the Erida timeline and crowd.
Yeah.
Everyone's got to be evil somehow.
Yeah.
What are they hiding?
Everybody's out to get something.
What is she doing with these stories?
There was one interesting sentence which I've written down just because I don't fully understand it yet,
mm-hmm.
which was when Enkidu was talking about how Scarpus used to take in the orphan children. He said about his friend Light, and he said, before Light could communicate verbally, whenever they had a bad day or would go missing, I usually found them back at Scarpus's place. I find it quite interesting that Light was a perhaps non-verbal...
Like choosing to be a mute, maybe?
Maybe. Yeah. It just makes me want to know a lot more about them as a character and their background and things.
Was it with Scarpus that most of them met then? Because we know how they met Hina, I think it is, the tiefling.
Yeah.
And we obviously know how they met Alcibiades.
Sure.
But yeah, do we know like how far back? Obviously Gilgamesh introduced Enkidu and gave him his name as well.
No, and I might be completely wrong, but whenever Light has come out from an inside check, David's always been like, they don't say anything, but they just smile at you. And it's been quite interesting. There's been no verbal communication between them, which, makes me want to know more about why that is.
But they are the healing type, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Anyway.
Very interesting. Do you reckon we're going to meet Scarpus further down the line?
There's a potential. The name's out there now.
I'm hoping that David keeps all these threads open. Mm. Yeah.
We've got loads of things to explore, though. We've got, like, all the stuff back from when they're in the Codex, all of those kind of names that came up. We've got, like, obviously things from Enkidu's past, Gwen's family as well.
Yeah.
Like, we have so many potential paths. Yeah.
The thing is, they've got the tea tournament now as well to kind of move them rapidly on from place to place.
Yeah.
So they've always got like an agenda of, okay, we want to move on to the next place as quickly as possible, but it's close enough to all these different places around Dravaine that they can kind
still
of
drop
just have a day's adventure.
Yeah.
Go back to Rostal and find out what the hell's going on there.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Oh, no. I would avoid. Leave that behind. Thank you. That was a messy, messy time.
Yeah.
Oh, also, we now know the name of... I don't think we heard this before, but the name of Gaius's mum.
Oh, yeah, we
Arya.
Did.
We got a bit of Hamlet at the end of the episode there.
Yeah, that was lovely, wasn't it?
Really glad he went with that quote. It was gorgeous.
Gaius being truthful. Oh, my gosh.
You would hope he's being truthful if he's actually tattooed it on himself. Yeah. That's pretty permanent.
No, could you imagine? He's got it tattooed. Oh, he's like, I lied. You're like, that is on your body forever
now,
sir.
The ultimate double cross.
It's kind of the name as well. It's like, Arya. Is that her name? Arya?
Arya,
maybe.
Honestly, it would be the ultimate con artist move, though.
That would be
have great. A fake name tattooed onto your body. So it's like, how can you question me? It's on here. It's on my skin. Why would you question me? Like, that was
he's so deep into the lie at this point.
Yeah.
Hey, wait, this shit is permanent?
Yeah, he thinks it's a temporary tattoo that you could just like rub off in a bit of soap. Yeah. And then he's like, wait, hold on. Shit, it's on my skin forever.
I wish I'd chosen red.
Yeah.
But the tattoos continue into the next episode, I believe.
Yeah.
We get one from Gwen.
Mm-hmm.
And Oren looks at his own tattoo in that episode as well, just like...
Yes, and says, no, I'm all right, thanks. Mm.
Yeah, because I forget that he's got a tattoo all off his arm.
He kind of mentions it, but never really blooms into anything. Like, we still know so little about Oren.
Don't know much about it, no.
All of these guys gave backstories in the last one. We heard about, like, Enkidu's past, we heard about Guy's past... truthfully, and we heard about, you know, a load from Gwendolyn and even Juno in that aspect. But we didn't learn anything about Oren.
Nope.
No.
Other than he's an Abraca lad.
He's an Abraca lad.
Given he's got his book of notes, I want him to send a message to Eliwick.
Oh, yeah.
That should happen.
Yeah, he's the only one that hasn't had a message
sent. He's the only one who hasn't sent a message home now. Apart from, Gaius hasn't actually as well, has he? But
Oren, phone home.
I mean, he can send his own messages.
He can send his own messages.
He can use the notebook if he wants to. He decided not to. What an abracalad.
Oh, lad, I walk alone.
Don't make me send 5 messages.
Don't make me send them. Shall we move on to episode 47?
Yeah.
Tea time. We love it. So, yes, they make their way to the Knotted Strings Tavern in Medrivane, obviously getting that nice little, again, another little reminder of Eredur and sort of the statue being put up outside. Yeah. We're like, great, good. Just constant reminders that that is still a thing, as much as we're like, haha, funny, silly adventurers. So, like, yes, here's the big bad, I suppose,
just
lurking
always
in the corner.
Those imposing ones. Yeah, it's Statue of Eredur, Statue of Crowl.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, come on.
Yeah, are they going to get this in every town, or are they just going to fight a bad guy, and then the next town just has an effigy of that big bad? I mean, there could be the Mirrored Folk.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Maybe.
Who knows? There could be one of those in every single
They're
one.
They're just like, oh, the Eredur Festival. Yes, welcome. And they're like, oh, for God's sake.
You go round the back and there's like a little carving of do not trust. And it's like, ah, okay, we're getting somewhere.
Got it. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. But it was good because they kind of finally made it to the town and they sort of started to sign up. And from then on, it just got silly. Like everything was just kind of very trivial and light. Like even the little things, like them picking up their stamps when they were signing up.
Yeah, yeah.
Things like that. And
the lying to the queue that their security guards go home. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that was incredible.
It was a very good lie.
It was.
It was a good start.
It worked for about 10 seconds.
Yeah. You know, any less competition is still less competition, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the thing is as well, it's the classic like Gaius thing of starting a plan but not quite realizing the consequences.
Yeah.
And so it was like, just go inside for a drink, and it's like, wait, but they'll meet the real
they'll see that it's
the real one. Like, there's no point doing that, but they tried. But it was nice to see them kind of pick out their stamps and kind of pick stuff that was very individual to them. Like, I think Oren had the keys. Gwen had the wolf as well.
Yeah, that was a cool choice.
It was nice. It was just like a little hint to their personality.
And Juna being able to change hers as well to the because the seven
it was from an owl
seven petal
to the flower
was there.
Fate.
I mean, this is in the Twain Tite tournament stamps. That's quite is that not quite significant? I don't know.
Maybe.
You never know. Maybe it means that she was always meant to doom the tournament.
This was their fate. The fate marked 5, and there's 5 people that can enter the tournament.
It's her destiny. Yay.
That's actually a very good point. I can't believe that. There's like big hints to everyone.
Maybe this is how Enkidu becomes king.
Yeah.
It's 500 gold piece prize, and Enkidu becomes king.
Yeah. That's what it is.
Prime
the two winning options of this game.
Each spoon is a bit of the crown.
Could you imagine they fashion a crown out of spoons? Oh, I love that.
That's so appropriate for this party. Yeah.
Or a thrown out of spoons.
They did stick with the name Abracalads as well, so that was great.
I love that they're using that.
Deliberately making it cheesier with the S being a lightning or whatever lightning said. And then just Ben being like, no, stop.
Lads.
Yeah, Oren's not a fan, but they went along with it because it's fun and I enjoyed it. But the first trial was actually one of the most interesting because it sounded so simple and yet it was very difficult. So just the idea of like these poles in the water in the river and then like jump across. And you think Gwen would ace this immediately because, you know, with the acrobatics and the slow falling, you'd think that it would just be so easy for her to do. Like, I initially, when I heard it, I was like, oh, I'm not worried. Like, she's pretty athletic and stuff. But they supported her so much.
Well, I mean, she felt confident enough to do, like, 2 at a time.
Yeah.
You know, so she had that confidence as well. Mm. It was only kind of when you realised, okay, they're sinking and they're jumping out of the water or wobbling and things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, obviously there's going to be more of a challenge in there. But on face value, you were like, yeah, this is her thing.
Mm-hmm.
So lucky that she did it first time as well, though, because we had 2 other members that just disqualified themselves.
Didn't really think that through.
Yeah.
Like, I know. A guy just jumping into the water as an otter was just a bit... What? Like...
Yeah, but I'm all for Otter Gaius stays.
Yes. Oh, Otter Gaius was adorable.
I utterly loved it.
And a very niche reference to utterly... Ah!
Very good.
Utterly love it.
No, I
love that.
I'll get out.
Well done. I'm proud. No, that was a good pun. I'll take it.
Nice.
No, it was just the fact that the niche as well. So the niche reference to Benedict Cumberbatch as well.
Yes.
For a second, I forgot that people say that Benedict Cumberbatch is an otter. And yeah. I thought it was a reference to this one advert that Benedict Cumberbatch had been in where he dives into the water. And I was like, oh, is it a reference to this, like, perfume advert or something? And I was like, oh, no, wait, there's this whole, like, meme of him being an otter. Yes. So I actually Googled it. I was like, why am I researching this part of the episode? Because I was like, I literally typed in, it's on my search forever now, Benedict Cumberbatch diving in the water.
So for the rest of the episode, did you imagine guy looking like a tiny Benedict Cumberbatch then?
Yes, that's what I thought in my head. Because I must have missed it the first time. I must have missed the fact he turned into an otter. And then when they said otter, I was like, what? And then went back. So I just thought he was just calling him Benedict Cumberbatch.
Amazing.
I was very confused. But it was very cute. And it was, like I said, the just general support from everyone. Whilst Enkidu and Guy, like Enkidu just trying to thunderstep and then immediately falling into the water.
Yeah, I've come to help you, Splash.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? And then the boots from Orin.
Yeah.
And then Juna giving inspiration as well. And then, like, having the, you know, everyone fly out and kind of help her with the cutting of the rope to get the keys.
And then Gwen finding out that she's got scissors in her thief's tools kit the whole time.
Yeah. Thief's tools, I know. There you go, fellow adventurers.
Yeah.
Now you
maybe
know.
She left them in her dress or something like that. Not in her new lumberjack joppers or whatever she's wearing. What was she? Dungarees.
She's put it in a different pocket and can't remember which one. Yeah, like, wait, which pocket is it?
It's not on my tool belt.
No, it was just great, though, to kind of have that. Kind of just, it was a very simple challenge, but it was still, like, so much tension involved.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Like, she might fall off, the poles could hit her. And, like, even the end, oh, her hitting her ankle. I physically cringed.
You felt it, didn't you?
It was horrible. Like, props to Grace for her acting, because I genuinely felt like she'd snapped her ankle. And I was just sat listening to it like, But she did it. She got the key and they got the first spoon. So, you know, it's like a little achievement. Do you know what I mean? After everything they've been through and what they've lost.
Yeah. Small victories kind of thing.
Yeah, it's nice to kind of gain something.
And like you say, they did it as a party. Whether they were disqualified or not, they all tried to do things together despite it being just one person running over it. And definitely picked the right person as well.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Gwen, Kai Hilda. Absolutely aced that. But it does make me wonder, if Enkidu had been tempted to fly over, what kind of spells he would have been pelted with?
Yes.
Because they said you can affect them with magic. I kind of wonder what David had in store there.
Yeah.
Guess we'll never know.
Well, even if it was just like, because obviously Orin used dispel magic on the poles.
Yeah, he did.
What if they just dispelled magic on him?
Yeah, then just dispel magic on him.
And just pointed at him and went, magic be gone, and he just drops. I mean, that would have been funny enough, do you know what I mean? But the thunder step was a great moment. Just the idea of him bursting out of a cloud of thunder and then just sploosh.
Oh, God.
Straight into the water.
We've all seen that mental image. We've watched enough Wipeout.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it was the most human we've seen Enkidu in a while as well, which is nice.
Yeah.
It was like, ah, there he is, there he is, there's the boy.
Backtracking a little bit to the knotted strings, because there was a little bit of like chat while they were looking at the pub about the cycle of strings, which is more, you know, to do with the Shrouded Lady that's been dropped.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It did kind of make me think that maybe the way back, the phylactery back in Tillersham, there was a moment when Orin was walking through the day that wasn't.
Mm.
He was walking through tomorrow. And the Shrouded Lady reacted to him on the statue of the Shrouded Lady. I remember there was something mournful about her. Yeah. And it's this whole idea that in the people that believe in the Shrouded Lady and follow her and the cycle of strings, that they live these like alternate timelines.
Yeah.
It's very Doctor Strange, wibbly wobbly timey wimey and all that.
Yeah.
Multiverse.
Yeah.
But yeah, it kind of made me wonder whether, like, you know, if the Shrouded Lady, because she's aware of these timelines, she appears to people differently throughout them. And it just got me thinking.
That's really interesting.
It was a nice little kind of touch back to the origins by David and Ben. But obviously only Orin would really know about that. I don't know if he would have come clean about those details.
No.
And that was a very traumatic event for him, so I don't think he'd want to like relive
just dwell
every
on it
single
too
detail
much,
and be like, yeah, exactly. So that is a good recall, to be fair.
Mm.
And it is that idea of a set path, isn't it?
It did make me wonder, you know, just whether the phylactery table, if that, you know, if the things that Crow was able to see in the future, because he kept going on about, like, sometimes it's different, sometimes you do this, and if you react in this way, then that means this outcome. That maybe it is that. Maybe the phylactery was a way of tapping into this, other lives within the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe things that are destined to happen, flames, you know, floods and the dead rising, all that stuff, you know, whether that is one of the more likely futures, but not inevitable is kind of my hope a little bit. But we're probably going to see it.
Getting deep. Getting deep. I love it.
Yeah. Well, there's got to be a bit of depth even when they're having fun.
It's inevitable. And it's not all just spoons and tea, I tell you that. Not here at Superfan Chat.
Gotta remind you.
So I have a question for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
If you were taking part in this tournament and you got to pick your own stamp, what kind of design would you go for? Just to put you both on the spot.
You just got devious thoughts there.
What would yours be first while we think of one?
Oh, mine would be not very interesting. Like, I would either go, it depends what they are, but I would either go for something, you know, generically music-y, probably treble clef or a musical note or something. Just, because that's what I do. Or if there was like more animal-y ones, I'd maybe go for like a trotting horse or something. Partly because I thought like that would be a nice thing, like Bessie-wise, it'd be a nice kind of like homage to Bessie. I'm surprised Gaius didn't choose a horse one. That would have been quite nice.
Are we imagining that this is our like characters that we created, or
if we were
a character in this world, or us?
I hadn't got that far. I was just thinking if literally I
suppose it'd just be you,
given a box and said pick a stamp. Yeah, you as you, Sam.
If it were my most played character, it would have to be a golden dragon's wing. There's a lot, probably on fire, if they've got that in there.
Detail.
If it was me, like a Pokeball, maybe?
Gotta catch all the spoon.
I think a Pokeball badge would be quite fun.
Yeah,
like gotta catch a spoon. Like, but instead of like, so imagine the Pokeball and you've got like the line through it and then the circle that they click for the Pokeball to open. Mm-hmm. Instead of it extending all the way around, it's like there's the end of the spoon and then it goes around the ball and becomes the actual spoon
part. Well, that's really clever. I like
to connect
that.
It. I think,
that'd be amazing.
Yeah, let's see if they have one of those.
That's cool. Very specific thing. Yeah, I was going to say, because for me, I'd probably just pick something like a rat.
I was going to say, I think if I had to guess yours would be
It'd be a rat, like a particularly fat one, just because mine have put on a bit of weight post-Christmas, you know, so.
Would it be like a realistic rat. Looking rat or a cartoony one with a really satisfied expression?
That's a good point. I don't even think I think they could have a cartoony one, but to be honest, even just a realistic one, like, I know that a lot of people think rats are pests, but I love them and they're very small and cute. So even a real one, I'd be like, yay, for me. But that's like me talking, do you know what I mean? Well, like a knitting needle or like some wool or something.
Yeah, that would make quite a nice little stamp image, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Our team name would be the Crumpets, obviously. So we might have to have a separate little tiny crumpet badge, which would be great because some people are terrified of them, right? You know, there's a phobia for the little holes that you get in crumpets.
Yes, of course. I thought you just meant people were scared of crumpets. So
nah,
I was like,
strike
what?
Fear into the hearts of everyone else. All us crumpets.
The hold, the griddle cakes.
Just someone like putting it in the toaster like, I genuinely thought that's what you meant. No, I like that. Like a skull and crossbones, except it's just like a crumpet and then like a knife and a fork or something. Behind it.
Or two spoons.
Or two spoons.
Trumpet
oh my gosh.
Nine spoons coming out of it.
And at the end of this episode, we get the teaser for as you walk inside the tavern, you see this goblin walking in.
Yes, the goblin cliffhanger.
And that's going to be your guest player, presumably.
Yes.
For next episode.
I'm very excited.
Do we have any ideas on who it could be? It could be anyone, really. Like, because Jeremy Cobb was a surprise for me and a delightful surprise the first time that we heard Jeremy.
We know the name of the person because Ben put it on the end of the No Small Questions that got released this morning.
I have not listened to it
as
yet.
As we record this, it's Sunday the 9th of January.
No, we've not listened.
Do we want to know? No. Put it in now.
Yeah,
it's been released. So.
Go on.
It's a player from Flintlocks and Fireballs. It's Robbie Bellicombe, who plays Scamp.
Oh, my God.
Scamp.
Oh, that's brilliant. Amazing. Oh, my God,
this will go out later, but this is brand new information to us.
Oh,
so we're super excited.
God.
And we're assuming they're going to be playing the goblin, but they might not be. That might be a red herring. Yeah.
Could you imagine it's a red herring and someone else walks in?
Do you think there's going to be a link, though, to somebody within the party? Are we going to find that out at the beginning of the next one? Like, how are they connected to all
of this?
So many
possibilities.
Because we've not encountered a goblin at all, I don't think. Like goblin, kind of kobold, kind of that level sort of creature, I suppose. Yeah, there's nothing like that. It's all the kind of like, you know, gnomes, halflings, half-elf.
Oh, God.
Oh, my gosh,
okay.
It's exciting.
I'm so ready for another guest player as well.
Yes! I love guest players.
Does that mean we might be able to get them in for the next, like, No Small Questions and stuff?
Ooh, I hope so.
Just be like, hiya.
Oh my God, I'm so glad you picked that up, Pippa. That's fantastic.
Yeah, well done.
I haven't listened to that episode yet, so.
Yeah, I know. Well, it dropped in for the Patreons. It dropped in last night on my inbox. So I was like,
yeah.
I need to scroll to the end. I need to know exactly who it is.
I love the idea that they're branching out to, like, you know, other podcasters within this network, and hopefully we're going to hear our guys turning up on theirs as well.
Yeah.
And, I mean, obviously, we had a little bit of a brief taster of Jeremy a couple of episodes ago, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it'd be nice to get another person in there.
Too long.
Mm, give him another challenge.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay, that's all the episodes that we.
Oh my God, we're stunned into silence over the new guest now. We're all just so, like, still processing it. So now everyone who listens to this is just going to hear us processing it.
We can look forward to talking about it next time we meet for this.
Yeah.
Exactly. Do you know what I mean? It's more content for us. I'm here for it.
Oh, yes. Do we have favourite moments to sign off with?
Ah.
Ooh, good point.
Ooh, good question.
I'm going to pick mine first today.
Ooh. Go on.
Mine is, just because it was so ridiculous, but I loved it so much and we haven't talked about it yet, was Chris's really stupid, ridiculous joke about the shield and the really, really long setup.
Yes.
About whoever smelt it dealt
whoever
it.
Smelt it dealt
oh
it.
Oh my God.
That was my favourite. That's my favourite. That's what I'm going with.
Oh, yes.
There were so many to choose from. I've got about 10 of them written down here, but that's the one I'm going to pick.
That's the best one. That's arguably the best one.
It was just silly.
Any setup for a pun, I'm here
but
for.
But very funny. Yeah, exactly.
I think mine would be the names of all the sausages and just hearing their joy, all of those being called out. And then, you know, the subsequent challenge to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a favourite moment. It's kind of the episode in general.
Yeah, but,
I just loved
sausage
it.
Sausage names. They were great.
What do we eat? A bit of Peppa Pig.
I just was really impressed by, I know this is like very, like, maybe not favourite moment, but I was very impressed by Chris's otter impression. That was good. That was a good otter noise.
All about the otters.
I was listening, like, I love an otter video, sure,
otter.
Like anyone. Ugh. But it was very good. Just kind of curling around people's necks and just squeaking at everyone. I was here for that.
And Enkidu not knowing about it for so long.
Yes.
Yeah, just being like, what's this otter? And just holding it out.
My new otter friend.
Yeah.
I have enough friends in my head, thank you. Very different to our favourites from last time, though. You know, like Guy flipping the bird at an army of golems and stuff like that. You know, we've all picked, like, quite nice, like, happy moments.
We need a bit of happy.
I think that reflects these four episodes quite nicely, though, doesn't it?
Mm. Mm. Return to the joy.
We needed a bit of a light relief after everything that happened in the Wingthrut workshop.
A return to silliness.
Bit side quests, as I said.
Yeah.
Return to the side quest. Level up, get that XP, you know, exactly. Get ready for the big boss.
Yeah.
It's all good.
We'll go tense again at the end of the third arc.
Well, thanks everybody for listening. Whoever stuck around this long, cheers.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
It's been great.
I know, I've enjoyed this. It's nice to catch up and just fangirl about nice things for once.
Exactly.
Yeah,
you know.
We should do this more often. Yeah.
Not even record it. We'll just sit here and chat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just catching up.
Yeah. Just eating up on Zoom, you know.
Yeah. By the time it gets to the next month, we'll have talked about all the interesting points. We'll be like, what happened again?
Yeah.
Well, make sure you subscribe to the Patreon, because there's a couple of polls on there that I am very excited to see how they turn out. Yeah. I don't want to spoil it, because obviously, you know, you gotta sign up, guys.
Oh, there was one just before the weekend that I was like,
Yes,
I've contributed now.
Have you done? You contributed? Good.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Yeah, I've done it.
We were talking about this prior to recording. We were like, oh, make sure you vote on it. Like, you got to vote on it. So, yes, subscribe to the Patreon.
I saw your comment as well.
I hadn't actually
voted for the rat one until I saw your comment. I was like, oh, yeah, I have to do that.
Yeah, I did as well.
You've got to vote for the rats. That's all I'm saying, guys. Rats. No spoilers, but rats.
I'm not going to influence the poll at all. But...
Get on the Patreon.
Well, shall we sign off in the classic Anon for Now fashion?
We shall.
I think we should.
Anon for Now.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.